Welcome to The Well. This podcast focuses on applying the Bible to our everyday lives, discussing real life issues from a Christian perspective, and encouraging women to walk in faith. As Jesus followers, we have all experienced the freedom that comes with choosing to follow Him, and we want to be a part of your journey to living a life rooted in Christ. Hey friends, it is Tiffany, and I am back for episode 2, for season 2 with Truth Rising's podcast. This is from a recent event that we had for Truth Rising called The Way. It was an event for military and first responder marriages. And our second set of speakers is Alyssa and Lou Houck. Y'all, they speak into how to love well and love with no regrets. Do not miss this episode. If you can, listen to this with your husband so that you can participate as they tell you to throughout. This was extremely impactful in my own marriage, and I am praying and hoping that it will be for yours as well. Share this as well with your friends that you know are married and need this. You'll know what I'm talking about when you get to the end of this, this episode. All right, without further ado, let me let them just get to it. So here we go, Alyssa and Lou.
All right, so the first, it works. All right, working. We're good.
Breaker, one night. Yeah, okay, yeah.
All right, let me get our timer going here just to make sure we're following the good example of Shawnee.
We just lost 2 minutes.
Okay, go ahead. Start.
All right, so kick it off with a quick intro. My name's Lou Houck, recently retired after 21 years, Army Special Forces. Joined the Army when I was 17, pre-9/11. 9/11 happened. 6 months later, I volunteered for Special Forces and spent my entire career doing that. Loved it. I am a, I am a father of 8. I'm a father of 2 and a stepfather of 6. I am a widower, and above all things, I am a son of God, right? Back in 2009, I had a pastor ask me one time who I was, and long story short, I said, oh, well, I'm a soldier. I'm a leader. And he just kept asking me. I kept listing all these things that I identified myself as. And then at the end, he's like, well, are you married? I was like, yeah. He's like, are you a husband? I was like, oh, yeah, sure. And then he was like, well, do you believe in God? I was like, yeah. He's like, are you a Christian? I was like, yeah. Yeah, of course. I'm here, right? Anyways, nine years later, and I'm sitting in life group with my buddy Mike and his wife Julie. And I just had this moment whenever he asked everyone, like, who are you? And I was like, I'm a son. And so that's why I identify so strongly with that. But that being said, you know, the fact that I am a son of God, I still believe in a God of miracles. Even though my 35-year-old wife, going on our 15th year of marriage, succumbed after 3 years, 2 months, and 11 days of an incurable cancer. Even though the miracle that God said was going to come the way that I understood it, and yet it did not, I need everyone to know that I still believe in that God, and that God of miracles.
And I am Alyssa Gavulik, now Houck, and I am a psychotherapist and a marriage and family therapist, and I have, I'm also a widower, and I have, well, now 8 kids. So he stole all my thunder, didn't he? Telling you all about about our big family. And I still believe in a God of comfort and compassion, even though I lost my husband of 15 years in a parachute training accident, very tragically, very unexpectedly, and was immediately widowed at 33 with 6 children ranging in age from 15 years to 15 months old. And I still believe in that God of comfort and compassion, even though a year later I lost my 2.5-year-old daughter in a drowning accident. And I still believe in that God of comfort and compassion, even though 6 months after she passed away, I lost one of my brothers to suicide. And I still believe in a God of compassion and comfort, even though 11 months later, I lost my youngest brother in a quadruple homicide that was covered up by arson and federally investigated. And that all happened in a really short period of time. And the only way I could have survived it is that I continued to cling to the God of compassion and comfort who could carry me through. There was no other way.
So whenever we were asked if we would speak at this event, and Alyssa and I started trying to, you know, kind of war game or brainstorm what we were going to discuss, you know, we looked at each other and we're like, wow, we've only been married for, well, at the time when they asked us, we'd just plan on getting married. We had a short courtship, you know, like 6 months, and then we got married. So we've been married for 3 months. But nonetheless, we've been asking ourselves, like, well, what do we talk about? I mean, we do have, you know, collectively almost 30 years of experience being married. But really, what did we learn, right? And what did we learn being active duty military spouse, active duty service member? What did we have, and what did life strip away from our fingertips? What did we learn, right? What can we pass on? And so, you know, I looked at her and I said, well, I learned how to love like there's no tomorrow. And she was like, well, what does that mean? So on April 3rd of 2021, I was in an ICU room at a local hospital there in Miramar, Florida, Miramar Beach, Florida. And I'd spent several hours with my wife, who had been intubated for 5 days at that point. And I was celebrating Good Friday. It was her favorite day of the year. I was celebrating Good Friday with her. And so I did everything from reading from the book of Matthew and the book of John about the you know, the death and resurrection of Jesus to her. I remember taking communion with her. I turned on worship music and I lifted my hands and I praised with her. And then just before I went to sleep, you know, I laid my hands on her head and I just started praying for the miracle, praying for a miraculous healing that I was sure was going to come. And then at, you know, at 02:33 in the morning, all I hear was a flatline to beep. I look over my right shoulder and I know what's going on. I knew her heart had stopped, and I look down at her face and I'm like, no, God, okay, it's time to go to work. So I start praying for resurrection in that moment, believing she's going to come back, right? Not denial, just utter faith. I had nothing but faith to hold on to, right? And then Holy Spirit showed up and he just hugged me. And my heart rate slowed down and I opened my eyes and I just looked at her and I was like, all right, God, all right, she's yours. And in that moment, like literally, you know, over 15 years, almost 20 years of memory started like flashing before my eyes. And lots and lots and lots of bad times, right? Lots of times that I'd put her second, you know, over my career. And then towards the end of those memories, lots of really, 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 really like God-filled good times, right, started coming, you know, coming to the forefront. And I looked at her and I said, I'm sorry I didn't love you enough, but I loved you well. And I loved her well because of cancer, I learned how to love like there's no tomorrow.
And so as I started reflecting back on what I had learned in my experiences of loss, I thought back to, you know, this last few moments that I had to hold on to. My story is very different from his. He was there in those moments. I have only the moments before I knew anything would even happen. And I remember distinctly Valentine's Day. And I don't know about you guys, but, you know, I capitalize on the one day a year that I'm going to get, you know, wined and dined, maybe some chocolates, a balloon. I don't know. Give me something. Make it matter. Okay? And I remember just, you know, Josh was training. He was applying for a different position down at the SAO, and so he had to put in a package. And to do that, they had to do a ruck that was timed, and Josh was such a great dad. Again, we had 6 kids between 15 years and 15 months old, and you don't agree to that unless there's a good father offering to help you raise them, right? So every time he would go out, he'd take one of the kids with him, and he'd actually taken my oldest son with him on this ruck march, and It had taken him a little bit longer than he had anticipated. And I remember texting him furiously, right? Because he's running late for our date night, and I'm so upset, and our plans are going to be ruined. And I remember him texting me back, and he said, "This ruck march took me longer than I had expected, but I spent 3 hours walking and talking with my son, and I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world." You think that would have appeased me, right? No, I'm still mad. So when he comes home, I want to remind him. I'm like, "Look, we had plans. You're late. Like, I'm super frustrated. Like, nothing's going the way that I thought it would." And, you know, Josh had this sly way of, like, he was kind of reserved, and he only said certain things at certain times. And when he said them, you, like, should listen, because, like, he would tell the truth. And he just looked at me, and I'm, like, frantic and, you know, frustrated. And he looks at me, and he says, "Alyssa, if you want to spend some time together, you might want to act like somebody I would want to spend time with." And in that moment, I had a choice. In that moment, I could have listed every single reason why I had to be frustrated, every single moment in our entire 15 years of marriage that he had missed, that he had been late for, that he didn't show up for, that we had to reschedule, or that I had to do alone. And I had lots and lots to tally at that point. But I didn't. I looked at him, and I made a choice, and I said, "You're right. I'm sorry. I just miss you, and you're about to leave, and I wanted this to be special. Go take your boots off, get changed. I'll just start cooking dinner in the kitchen, and we'll make the best of the evening." And we did. So I made fettuccine Alfredo, which I pretty much nailed. And we had my sister over. She just had a new baby, and we spent that time together. And I had redeemed that moment. I had really chosen in that moment to take hold of what was offered to me, even though it wasn't what I had been promised. And that's how I learned that, you know, there's no regret in loving well and choosing in the moment that you have, that's right there in your hands, to capitalize on and be grateful for what is being offered.
And so we're in looking at, you know, learning to love like there's no tomorrow, and realizing that there is no regret in loving well. Yeah, we had these very deep moments, obviously, like before I lost Sydney and before she lost Josh. And by the grace of God, I was able to look Sydney in the face and know without a shadow of a doubt that I loved her well, right? And so we decided that we're going to come off the top rope, you know, with a little exercise right here. And so first of all, this is for couples, and if you're not in a couple, by all means, you've been in a relationship, and you can absolutely just close your eyes, meditate, and be mindful in a moment that you had in the past to use as an example, or, you know, something you've been praying for in the future, a relationship you've been praying for in the future, but specifically for couples. I want all the men in the room, all the husbands, to do me a favor, just stand up next to your wife and turn and look at her, right? Now put your hands on either side of her face, please. Now, wives, please close your eyes. Don't smile. Don't move. And just look at her closed eyes. Look at them. There's no movement going on right now. Now, if those eyes never opened again, can you honestly walk away and say that you loved her well? All right, you can go ahead and open your eyes, relax, and then Alyssa's going to flip this.
So that was the last Valentine's Day that I got to spend with Josh, and he had a parachute training accident a few days later after he left for TDY, and they kept telling me that he had passed away. They kept telling me that I needed to make funeral preparations, but I hadn't yet seen him. I hadn't yet got to touch him. I hadn't yet got to realize that. And so finally, a week later, after he had been escorted home and I got to see him, he didn't quite look the way that I thought he would. It had been a whole week. And I remember leaning into the casket, and the first thing I did was I pulled out his hands, because I had held those hands, and I knew those hands. And I realized that it was him. And so, wives, I want you to reach over, and I want you to grab your husband's hands. And husbands, I just want you to close your eyes and be still for a moment, no movement. What if you were sitting next to them and those hands would never move again? And there'd be nothing left to say. There'd be nothing left to undo, no choices left to make. Would you be able to say, I have no regret in loving him well? Okay, you can open your eyes. So as a marriage and family therapist, something that I do is study relationships. And I have been fascinated by them for a really, really long time. But I actually became even more fascinated when this very significant relationship in my life had been so abruptly terminated. And I found this Harvard study. It was a 75-year, and I thought it was a 750, but it's like 740-something participant study that had been done over like the lifetime of these individuals, and they were studying what is the one thing that brings the most life satisfaction to individuals. And lo and behold, it probably won't surprise you that what they found was it was relationships, satisfying relationships. So of course, my curiosity, I'm like, okay, so what does that mean? What does that look like? And very, very specifically, it is not necessarily the quantity of relationships that you have. It is the quality of the relationships that you have. And so the best visual that I can give you for that is that when you are at the end of your life and you are looking back on the timeline between you and whoever it is that you are about to lose or have lost, what you will be able to inventory is kind of like all these snapshots of interactions, of moments in time, of engagements with this person. And if you can look back at all those snapshots, and the majority of them are positive, they're good, then it felt good to be in relationship with them, and it was a quality relationship. But if you look back, and there's lots of moments of regret and disconnection and miscommunication and conflict, then it's very important that you recognize then that's not going to be identified as a quality relationship. So when we look at this term, and this is the term that I want you guys to say this after me, and it's a weird word, but just go ahead and say it because it'll help you remember it. Positive alacrity. Alacrity. Is that the weirdest word you've ever heard? When I heard it, I had never heard it before, but it's called positive alacrity. And what positive alacrity encourages us to do is in that place of awareness that every single interaction that we have has a valence. Either it is a good interaction or it is a bad interaction. And we measure that based on how we feel to be in relationship with that person. And I want you to ask yourself, does it feel good to be in relationship with you? Like as much as you are able to inventory, do I make it feel good to be in relationship with me? Do I try to make it a positive interaction when I have the opportunity to engage? And so positive alacrity is actually the proactive, intentional choice to use these micro moments. We're not talking about major moments, but micro moments to offer something that would be positive, like a compliment. Man, you look absolutely stunning tonight. Or thank you so much for making me this chicken pot pie. You know it is my favorite, you know? Or leaving a note on your pillow that says, I know I had to leave before you woke up. I really appreciate you supporting the long hours that I've been gone this week at work. You are a part of our success as a family. So that's what positive alacrity is.
So, you know, for me, what does, you know, positive alacrity, you know, for me personally, and how can I, you know, communicate this and make it relatable? The most recent example I could use is you know, I'd finished brushing my teeth and I came out of the restroom and was heading, you know, beelining for the bed. And Alyssa was like, dang it, I forgot to set the coffee maker. And I was walking, and I like stopped and beelined, went right out and started.
I love coffee.
It is her one vice. People.
I need it first thing in the morning.
So I immediately, you know, head to the kitchen and start setting up the coffee maker for the morning. And it's crazy. As I'm walking there, right, I started being reminded of times when, you know, same situation. I'm getting ready to get into bed, and Sydney was like, "Hey, will you rub my feet?" And I was like, "Really?" Now imagine she had cancer feet, right? The chemo just like ravaged the bottom of the soles of her feet, right? Extremely painful. And she was still working at the time, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours a day as a nurse midwife. And so when she said, "Hey, will you rub my feet?" she legit needed it. And what did I do? I huffed and puffed. And I did it reluctantly, but not before one of those negative micro moments, not before I broke her heart just a little bit. And so I started, started asking myself, you know, why did I just so easily redirect and go do, you know, come to make coffee? And why didn't I huff and puff, right? And then it was like light bulb came on, and I realized that at the time, the way that I would wind down for the day is I would crawl in bed and I would turn on, you know, How I Met Your Mother or, you know, whatever, you know, The Scrubs, whatever mindless sitcom I could, right? And to, you know, clear my mind before I went to sleep, which the reality was I wasn't clearing anything. You know, the reality was I was achieving or reaching for a dopamine hit, right? And if anyone understands how, you know, media, nicotine, any sort of other addiction, it's not so much about the addiction to that source as it is the dopamine in your brain, right? The feel-good hormone that you're getting. So for me, it was about dopamine in the moment right before I went to sleep, right? Well, Alyssa and I, we don't have a TV in our bedroom. But what we do have is we have about 10 or 15 minutes every single night, face-to-face, no kids, which with 5 kids in the house, that's a big deal, right? No kids, no work, no TV, nothing. We literally just have 10 to 15 minutes before our day ends, right? That's where my dopamine hit comes from at night. And so anyways, you know, I made the coffee and, you know, went back to the room and had our time. And the next day I had to share it with her, you know, and here I was having like these, I was having positive alacrity or experiencing it, you know, and I had no idea. That was not me. That was all God just moving in me and still working his way, you know, into my heart through cancer. So then I started asking myself, all right, well, loving like there's no tomorrow. Hey, that's just, that's making sure that your wife that must have her coffee in the morning definitely has her coffee in the morning. But what else does it look like? You know, it can be much deeper than that. And again, I always look back on where I was and where God has brought me through all the pain and suffering and how I grew in the moment. And so there were times throughout the almost 15, 20 years that Sydney and I were together that I'd be so busy, always focused on work, even though I was home, you know, my phone was always going off and I was always having to deal with some fire that was popping up out of nowhere with a soldier or you name it, right? And she would try to hug me and I'm just like, real quick, hey, I'm busy. I got to go. Let me do this. We'll do this later, right? And then for the last 7 days before she went to the hospital, you know, before she, you know, spent a week in the hospital and passed away, I didn't have to. I got to put her on my back once a day, every day, and I bear crawled up the stairs with her on my back. And when I got to the top of the stairs, I would stand up very slowly because she was so weak she could hardly stand on her own, and I'd reach around and I'd grab her arm and bring my arm around her, and then I'd position myself in front of her and she'd wrap her arms around my neck and she would just lean on me, right? And in those moments, she was getting those moments of just a hug, right? That physical, that emotional bonding that for the previous 15 years she'd wanted and she never got. She got those moments whenever I lifted her up off the toilet, you know, helping her use the restroom, or lifting her up out of the shower, you know, bathing her, or pulling her out of bed, you know, in the morning or in the middle of the night, you name it. She always got those moments, right? So what do those moments of positive alacrity look like now? Is they look like a moment where you're standing in the courtyard, in a courtyard of an ancient Roman, you know, site, and it doesn't matter that you're in Italy, that you're in Rome, that you've always wanted to go here. It doesn't matter how many people are present, how hot it is. All that matters is that in that moment, your eyes are closed. You're face to face, forehead to forehead, holding hands, being mindful in that moment, smelling her hair, feeling her skin, being mindful of the air that's blowing, you know, passing between yours and her body. Right, those moments of positive alacrity are 60 seconds in the aisles of Walmart with your kids saying, "Dad, really? Come on." It's those moments in the meat section in Walmart when you're trying to figure out what steak you're going to buy, and you decide to just stop focusing on the ribeye for 1 minute, for 60 seconds, and just turn around, just grab her hand and just hold her. And it looks the exact same way when hundreds of people literally have to walk around you at a high school football game because you're not going to pass up this chance to just have 60 seconds with her. For me, loving like there's no tomorrow, right, and experiencing positive alacrity is being able to put the world on hold, even if just for 60 seconds.
I'm verklempt. So I'm thinking about it too, and I'm asking, you know, what does that positive alacrity look like for me? How do I live that out? And how do I really make sure that I have no regret in loving well? And, you know, before Josh passed away, we had really long, hard seasons of separation. And I was basically a single parent with six kids for 20 out of 24 months when we were together, towards the end of our relationship. And when he was doing some special operations joint cycle that just was like long and hard and grueling. And I remember I had built up a lot of, you know, frustration and resentment. And, you know, I felt like every time I got a chance to let him know how frustrated I was, that I needed him to know like how hard this was and how frustrated this was. And I started to realize it was really wearing on us. It was really wearing on the ability to be connected when he was home. And here's the thing. His schedule didn't slow down. I prayed to God about it. I negotiated with him. I asked him to appeal to the powers that be. His op tempo did not slow down. But instead, every time I wanted to send a text or say a statement or point something out that was hard or that I was frustrated about or that I could complain about, I intentionally sorted through all of my thoughts and feelings at that moment and thought, what can I genuinely, authentically be grateful for? And so instead of saying, I am so exhausted by these kids, they've run me ragged all day long, and I wish you were here to help me, I would send a text that said, thank you so much for being such an amazing father when you're here, that it is so evident when you're gone. And when I would be crawling into bed so lonely in the middle of the night because I hadn't had anybody laying beside me for months because he was gone on another deployment, instead of saying, gosh, when are you coming home? You know, I'm so frustrated. They always roll the timeline right. They never roll the timeline left. I would instead text and say, I'm so grateful that I still long for you and I still wait for you to come home and I still miss you. Even after 15 years, I still get excited when I know you are about to come home. So for me, positive alacrity was all about being so intentional to communicate what I was grateful for, even in the midst of a whole lot of stressors and a whole lot of frustration and a whole lot of overwhelm. And I noticed that when I really started being intentional about that, the feeling of our relationship really shifted. And the night that I realized that I think that we had finally recovered from that season of us kind of being disconnected and me being negative and frustrated, where I had shifted really to this really positive interactions, was Wednesday night before his last TDY. And we had finally gotten all the kids to bed, and we laid down, and we had just a few moments before I knew we were going to both fall asleep because I knew we were exhausted. And he just pulled me in tight, and he said, "We have such a good marriage, don't we?" And I thought, yes, we do. Like, he just affirmed out loud, with intentionality, all of the effort and investment that I had been making over the past several years. And I was so glad that he did, because when he passed away a week later, I didn't have to wonder, had I done enough? Had I really loved him to the point where I would have no regrets? And I felt like I could. And so in our relationship with Lou, we are constantly affirming each other and texting the things that we're grateful for. And, you know, y'all, I should read you some of his texts. Like, he is really, really romantic. And sometimes I'm at work, and I work as a clinician all day long, and so, like, I have clients back to back to back. And, you know, Lou will send me this sweet text, and I get to pull up my phone and see something positive. But you know what my favorite is? Is when he goes, "Look out the back window." I'm not joking. And I'm like, oh. And I look out, and he's sitting in his truck behind my office, and he's like, "I just wanted 5 minutes with you before your next client." And I'm like, I am so glad that I sent that positive text on the way to work when I had a few more minutes to tell him how much I love him and appreciate him. And he's like, you know, bringing me coffee and just always trying to love me well. And so the way that positive alacrity looks to me is that when I have the choice to complain about something or tell them that I'm thank you, tell him that I'm grateful for something, I always choose gratitude.
So now I want to discuss positive alacrity in light of ruptures, right? Because in every relationship, you're going to have ruptures. And I mean, if I'm being like just brutally honest, we had a rupture on the way here, right? And I mean, Satan will never pass up. He will never pass up the opportunity to throw a wrench in it, right? But so the one thing that for me that separates those moments, getting back to those moments of goodness, right? Those moments that I want to remember, right? Those moments that I want to long for when I'm not in her presence, right? The hardest part for me is to get past that prideful stage of, I'm sorry, right? Because I very rarely am, I would say, very rarely do I think I'm wrong. I'll say that. I really don't think I am most of the time, but... but... I mean, and
but sometimes you are.
Yeah, actually, quite a bit. But for me, it's getting past that prideful moment of just saying sorry, mm-hmm. right? Because even if I think I'm right, right, it doesn't justify, you know, that my response to her in that moment. Even if we don't see things the right way, it does not justify the tone of voice I use, the words I say. Or more than anything, one of the things I'm really bad about is like my body language. Like she can look at me and she just knows. She's like, there's like a Hulk that is inside just dying to come out. That's the one thing that knocks us off track is pride. So doing everything that you can to repair that rupture as soon as possible, right? To come to a compromise. What Alyssa always tells me, not she doesn't always tell me, but often tells me is, do you want to be right or do you want to get to what's right? Right? And that always penetrates me pretty, my heart pretty bad. And I'm like, ugh, I'm being a jerk. All right, deep breath, right? And then look, I'm sorry. I love you.
But here is something that Lou taught me, and I really appreciate him for this, is when I would say I'm sorry, he actually shocked me the first time he looked at me and he said, I forgive you. And I was like, I don't know if I like how that made me feel just now. Like, that made me feel like I really did do something wrong. And you're like having to give me forgiveness. Like, I was just like, wait, hang on. But we talked about it. And he was like, no, because it's not okay. And when we say I'm sorry, we shouldn't be saying it so that they'll absolve us of our guilt or say it's okay. We should say it because we mean it. And because we want to repair the relationship, but we want to do it better. And so when the response is, I forgive you, it's way more of a repairing statement than it's okay. It's okay is too dismissive, and it doesn't honor the weight of what hurt. And real forgiveness honors the weight of what hurt and then releases the debt. And if you can't do both of those authentically, then you're not really seeking a true repair to that rupture. So, in this moment, we would like you to turn to your partner, if you have one here. And this time, we want you to keep your eyes open. And we want you to call into your mind what you thought about earlier. And Lou's going to guide the men to go first.
All right, guys. So, go ahead. And I'm going to say it like this, stare into the eyes of the most important human being on the face of this earth to you. That's what she is. And look deep and take time to reflect on all the things that make you love her. Think about the things that actually, when you think about them and you're not with her, give you that sense of falling deeper in love with her, and you just wish, oh, I wish I was with her. Well, guess what? You are now. Now think about all the things, all the pride, whether it's a long time ago or it's still near to the surface, it burns a little bit. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter what it is, and you don't have to say what it is. I'm sure. If it's in your mind, she knows it too. She's literally half of you, flesh of your flesh. Now just tell her you're sorry. Genuinely apologize for everything that is running through your mind right now.
And wives, here's your part. You have to look back and you have to feel the weight of it all. And then you offer back forgiveness. We are forgiven by our Lord and Savior, so we can offer genuine forgiveness and say it back, I forgive you. And now, women, I want you to think back to that time when you were holding his hands and his eyes were closed and all the things that you wish maybe you had done a little bit differently, or maybe how you should have highlighted the positive or valued certain things more. And I want you to let go of that pride. And in this moment, I just want you to offer a very genuine, I'm sorry.
So one thing that I want...
Wait. Forgive, I forgive you.
Oh yeah, as you were. Husbands, at this time, look back at her and extend that forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And just, it's very simple. I forgive you. Mm-hmm. I love you.
All right, now stay there looking at each other and holding each other's hands, because this is my favorite part. Oh, actually, don't. Don't stay there. Look at us.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm looking at her notes in parentheses. I am 42. And I'm in parentheses, it says we have to tell a quick story of why this is important. We have like 3 minutes, but they're loving it. This is good. We might be like 2 minutes over. Okay.
So you can still use these repair moments from ruptures as points of positive alacrity, right? And you can, but they can only be positive, a positive moment, if like you genuinely show empathy. If you genuinely can swallow your pride in that moment and really mean it when you say, I'm sorry, please forgive me. And if you're the one who is extending forgiveness, it can only be positive if you genuinely swallow your pride and your frustration. Because often whenever the other one comes back to apologize, you're still mad, right? Let's be real. But if you can't swallow your pride in that moment and forgive, extend that forgiveness, right? It doesn't mean doesn't mean disagreement's over, but it does mean the rupture's ending, mm-hmm. and we're coming back together to work together as a team to get to what's right instead of battling for who's right. Mm-hmm. Extending that forgiveness can make that a point of positive alacrity.
Mm-hmm. Gratitude.
Okay, so
gratitude. You story.
What's important about this? We're just going to jump to gratitude.
Okay.
Executive decision. The.
Wait, let's talk about what's right and not who's right. I think what's right is what we've just said. So we're going to practice this in vivo. This is a live experiential opportunity. Go ahead, babe.
So, here's
I appreciate you.
Here's, I love you so much.
You are so handsome.
She's way smarter than me. I love her so much. But what we loved about this moment and this exercise is we never got to do some of this, although I loved well, and she loved with no regrets, right? Like once Sydney left and once Josh left, once they both rose to glory, like our moments together with them stopped. We never got a chance to really, I mean, honestly, if we knew what was going to happen was going to happen, or what did happen was going to happen, we would have done something like this, right? And so go ahead and turn and face each other. So we're going to start with the husbands. Positive alacrity. Use this time to tell her what you're grateful for. Express gratitude in the present moment.
Okay, now wives, it's your turn. We're going to give you 60 seconds to look into your husband's eyes and tell them what you're grateful for about them.
Okay. So, you know, as we wrap this up, I want to point out that fortunately, unfortunately, by the grace of God, right, so much of this, you know, the simple acts, right, the simple mindset in being in relationship and, you know, being married, you know, is because of what we've gone through in our lives, right? You know, losing spouses, you know, losing a daughter, losing, you know, and we've all lost somebody, right? We all know, and I've said this before, we all know what it's like for life to strip what feels like is the most important thing away out of your fingers, right? But we get to do this now, and I love doing this. Like, I love these moments, these 60-second moments with her. And by the grace of God, everyone in this room got to do what she and I never got to do with Sydney and Josh again. So like to end it with just a call to action. Don't take for granted, right, what is sitting in front of you today. Right? Genuinely, love like there's no tomorrow. Regardless of what's going on that day, regardless of how busy you are, it only takes 60 seconds.
And if every single opportunity that you have, that you're given, that you notice, which is positive alacrity, means you're also poised and ready to capitalize on those moments in a way that creates a micro experience with you that makes it feel good to be in relationship with you. And if you're intentional about doing that, you are very proactive in that, then you will also end this race that we call life and enter into glory and have no regrets in loving well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Here at Truth Rising, we believe in the power of prayer. And today, we want to pray a blessing over you and your family. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make His face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn His face toward you and give you peace. Amen.